All right, we looked at Proverbs 5, and we looked. I hate to do what we're going to do today. Does that make sense? But if we're going to do justice to what's in Proverbs, Job devotes two whole chapters to talking about one subject. Normally, Proverbs is this and this, and just jumps all over the place. And all of a sudden, in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 5, and that's what we looked at last week, in chapter 7, we got exactly the same thing. And I'm afraid we're going to get bogged down on chapter 7. Open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 7. They'll be perhaps pulling up these slides here in a few minutes. But you don't need it. All I've got on the screen is just Proverbs 7, so pick up your Bible. Let me ask you, did you ever watch I Love Lucy? Did you ever see an episode that had Tennessee Ernie Ford in it? You remember that? Sam, you remember that? I think it is the ultimate. I know Vitamin, whatever that episode was really, a popular episode. Tennessee Ernie Ford comes to New York, and he's as country as anybody you've ever seen. And she can't get rid of him. He's staying with Lucy and Ricky in their apartment, and she cannot get him to go back home. He's so fascinated by New York, but he's missing being home, and he sort of thinks, well, maybe I'll go home, maybe I won't go home. And, let me show you how country it was. You remember the folding bed? You remember that in that episode? I don't know if you remember it or not. This is a bed you'll sleep in. And he slept in it, but he didn't open it up. He said it's really hard to slide in between those two sides of the mattresses. If you ever get a chance, if you want to watch and pull it up, I guess you can pull up individual episodes on the internet. If you want to watch out what I think is the absolute funniest episode there's ever been. How's she going to get rid of him? I don't know if you remember how she... He got a letter from home from his mama. And he says... His mama said to Tennessee Ernie Ford, and I'm sure where we're headed. Proverbs chapter 7, Solomon says to his son, okay, and so here's mama talking to Tennessee Ernie Ford, and I think it was Cousin Ernie on that episode, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was his name, said, you'd better watch out for those New York women, they'll vamp you. And she happened to see that letter and said, if they start vamping you, you'd better get home. And so she dresses up like one of those New York women. She walks into the apartment and she says, "Who?" He said, who are you? He didn't recognize it was Lucy. I'm one of those New York women. I'm here to vamp you. And, oh, no, I'm going home. I mean, my mama warned me about all of this. My mama really, really warned me about these New York women. Said, no way, no way. And so she comes over there and starts hugging on him, runs her hands through his hair. And he said, what are you doing? She said, I'm vamping you. And he looks at her scared to death. And he thinks about the letter from his mama, steps back from her. And I think the all-time funniest line ever, vamp me some more, he says. Proverbs chapter 7. I want you to look at Proverbs chapter 7. My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands and live, and my law is the apple of your eyes. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin, that they may keep you from the immoral New York women. May keep you from immoral women, from the seductress who flatters with her words. Now, here is a father, my son. I think in the King James Version, 22 times he used the expression, my son. Scotty, I wish your kids were younger. Because I said to Kirk over here, he's got younger kids than you, I wish I could live my life with my kids over. If you want to train your children about how to live, memorize the book of Proverbs, and when itch situations come up in the lives of your children, sit down and read Proverbs to them. Let's see what God says about this. And, well, your son may be young enough to hear this about these New York women. And that's what this is. that's what this is all about. And it's graphic, and yet it gives us insight into the ways of seduction and the danger that lies therein. He says, I looked out the window. At the window of my house, I looked through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, Cousin Ernie, naive individuals who really do not understand what's happening. And sometimes by those that are not so naive in their lives, but all of a sudden, they don't see the whole picture, and they're simple in that way. Man, we married 10, 15 years. What's that seven-year itch all about? That's that older movie, but isn't that when the itching starts? It says start looking, and I don't know if that's scientific or not. But he said, I saw a simpleton. I perceived among the youth a young man devoid of understanding. Hear the words wisdom in this first paragraph. Now we get down to this individual who has not written these truths on his heart. And Solomon says to his son, write this on your heart. Passing along the streets near her corner, and he took the path to her house. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. That's amazing. Scott Studer, you will not remember what you said on 36th Street. It's one of the classic things I have filed away. We were talking about something like this, and I said, why do those women walking up and down Broadway dress the way they do? Yeah, that's where, you know, a lot of the rest of you remember what you said? He said, because it can't carry a sign. Isn't that interesting? The attire of a harlot. Are you aware there are just tons of individuals in America who would laugh at that? I want you to think about that. But they are Christian folks, folks in denominations, you know, wearing the name Christians. They don't understand this. You know the most shameful part? That's Christians, members of the Lord's church, who dress in a way that advertises themselves as an immoral individual. Don't get me started on this. Let me tell you, we teach our little girls to cover your private parts. And when they get in their young teen age, sometimes we train them even before they get to that age by letting them wear things that it wouldn't, there's no need for them to wear. But when they reach their teen years, they have no self-consciousness of exposing their bodies. The Bible talks about that word modest apparel. We use the word modest. I would give anything if we stop using the words modest apparel when we talk about how a Christian woman ought to dress. That's not the word. Modest apparel in 1 Timothy chapter 2 is talking about overdressing, not underdressing. You look at that. In that very passage, it's talking about whose adornment let it not be. And then it talks about, but then he uses two words to describe her dress. The words shamefacedness and sobriety. Sobriety means stop and think. Stop and think. If I advertise myself in the attire of a harlot, how are people going to perceive me and how am I going to be treated? We need to understand that. And the word shamefastness, what does that mean? What does it mean to be bedfast? You're tied to the bed. Shamefast. You're tied to a sense of shame. And it doesn't exist anymore. The attire of a harlot, you know, it's hard to, you know, it, it's, uh, it's just more and more difficult to even understand this passage right here. She was dressed like a harlot. She was loud and rebellious. No respect for authority. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the marketplace, at times at Walmart. Seen those things on Facebook? You know what we're talking about? Folks, it's all over our land. Now, my sermon this morning, I'm going to talk about being in the world, but not of the world. But Christians have just bought into this whole thing, you know, it's my body, I can do anything I want to with it. No, it's to be tied to a sense of shame. And so, there was a cartoon I saw in a bulletin 50 years ago of a woman a woman in her underwear, and I mean just almost, I don't mean colored cartoons like the Sunday papers, don't want you to understand that. Just a line drawing, and she's there in her slip and under, and the doorbell rings. And her friend there is there in some sort of bikini-type uniform, and the lady in the underwear says to her friend, "You go answer the door, I'm not dressed properly." There's something wrong with that picture. She had more clothes on than the woman who went and answered the door. Something is wrong in our society. Solomon says to his son, "Beware. Beware of a woman who dresses like a harlot." She may not understand it, but in that part of her life, she has the heart of a harlot. And she's always wondering about. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, unashamed, unblushing face, "Say anything." Is that a part of the language of our land of this day? Absolutely. And so she says, "I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows," and that has to do with perhaps with ceremonial cleaning under the old law. And she said, "I've paid my vows, so I came out to meet you." Remember the illustration we used from that Brekeen Faulkner thing? Men, you'll walk through life, and there may be little beautiful daisies that are out there, and you need to, you'll notice, you'll see every one of them, but when all of a sudden one of those daisies stands up a little bit taller and says, "Hello," you better run. And that's what this is saying. She said with a rebellious, boisterous, loud voice, she says, "I have paid my vows and I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you." Now then, she says, "Just come on in the house for a while. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, cinnamon. Come, stay all night. Let us take our fill of love." You want to define love in a three-letter word? Sex. "Let us fill our bed with, let's take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love." How on earth can you call fornication love? And yet we talk about he made love to her. No, he made lust to her. Love, properly understood, doesn't have anything at all to do with that relationship. And so she says, "Let us delight ourselves with love. My husband's not at home. He's gone on a long journey, and he's taken a lot of money, so he's not coming home for a while. And we'll come home on the appointed day, and I know when that day is." With her enticing words, she caused him to yield, and with her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her. As an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost him his life. Now therefore, listen to me, my son, my children, listen to me. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house, I want you to read that, is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. That's pretty graphic, isn't it? That's pretty graphic. And yet in our day, that is exactly where we are in relationship to this. Let me just say a word to all of you men who are here especially. You don't know how weak you are. Joseph knew how to handle fornication. Whenever Potiphar's wife tried to get him to stay with her, and the text indicates it was more than just once, it wasn't just sort of a thing, it happened again and again, and he left his garment and ran out of the house. Was it David Life that talked about this incident in this sermon? I've heard someone recently say, better to run down the street naked, or if you're from Tennessee or Mississippi, naked. Better to run down the street naked than to be naked in the house with a woman like this. I don't know if Joseph was naked, but when he went out in public, he was not dressed in the way he ought to have been in public, and he took off running. Well, we're just friends. And I can talk to her better than I talk to my wife. Yeah, she doesn't have her hair up in curlers. You understand what I'm trying to say? And I don't care what your wife is. I don't care how she is treating you sexually in relationship to that part of your marriage. If she is withholding sex from you, that's her problem. It's not your problem. Paul says to young Timothy, two words, flee fornication. He says that to Timothy? Don't you know Timothy's mother? And don't you know Timothy's grandmother? Don't you know what an outstanding young man Timothy is? Yes, and Paul says, I understand young men and those who are not so young. I guess I can say this. Retirement villages. More Viagra pills are sold. What's that place up around the south of Orlando at Wildwood? What's the name of that village up there? More Viagra pills are sold in that area than anywhere else in the state of Florida. Why? It's the atmosphere that sometimes can be in that place and the ready ability to have open sex. We had a young man in this church several years ago who at age 35 confided to me that he was still a virgin at age 35. How much admiration to have for somebody like that in this day and age. That's remarkable, isn't it? It's because he made a decision when he was young. I'm not going to violate that. Her ways go down to the ways of death. I'm glad chapter 5 and chapter 7 are in the Bible. It makes it easy in a Bible class teaching teens to discuss this matter. Because it's not some old man that's trying to put the morals that he had, 60 years ago in the Dark Ages. It's the wisest man of the Bible saying, you'd better watch yourself. Her house is the way to hell. You want to destroy your life? You want to destroy your marriage? There is a trust built inside of marriage, and when there's sexual violation of that trust, that which had made that marriage so wonderful is taken out. And if you don't trust if you cannot trust your mate, and when there's been unfaithfulness, every time he's late coming home, how can she help but think about what's happening in that situation? Anybody want to make any comments, or shall we just keep on going? Yes, Henry, speak loud now, Henry. Henry, you were one of the ones who said people don't speak loud enough in this class. All right, you're the one who said. Now say it loud enough so everybody can hear it. Well, whatever I have said here in this class, I've said to the whole church. You know what the problem is? People don't want to hear it. There are likely people sitting in this place right now who've not heard what God says about this. It's not Dan's idea. All it did was read one chapter in the Bible. And so that's the problem. And with our culture changing as it is, Scotty, I don't know how you raise godly children in this age. Thank God for what you've done. And thank you, children, for making it possible for this little bratty kid that wreaked havoc in Bible classes in this church to be an elder in the church today. And Linda and Scott, thank you for not giving up on him. I know how proud you are of him, and there's every reason to do that. Don't you give up on your kids. And Scotty wasn't that bad, Bill Jr., how many times did you get kicked out of class? Only once. Okay, your daddy probably heard about it, right? Okay. Here's a deacon in the church. Same thing. Amen. Don't you give up on these kids. And just keep that in mind. And when I said he was a bratty kid, he wasn't. He's just adventuresome. Okay. Let's get to some more parts. We got only one more week to talk about this. I mean, this study of Proverbs is about over. And I'm not through, I've got another 12 topics to teach. You can't do it, We'll come back and maybe at another time and talk about some of these. Let's look at speech. Let's look at this matter of speech. And I've got wisdom about speech and integrity. We probably today will not get to, I just checked my watch. We will not get to integrity. I want us to talk about bad speech and what Solomon says about bad speech. And I think I've got these verses in here in the order in which they, chapter and verse, in order in which they appear. Not do that for some reason every now and then. Here's what the Bible says about your speech. Chapter 10, verse 6. Can you read those numbers? Is that font big enough? I mean, I worry all the time about when I put a font up there, will people be able to see it? And okay, verse 6. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Violence covers the mouth of the wicked. What does that mean? Well, what do you do to those that curse you? Love your enemies? Do what to them that curse you? Well, you know that verse. A loose translation of that, curse back at them. Curse them that curse you. That's not what God said. And it is interesting that the actions of the wicked and the mouth of the wicked brings violence into their lives. What's the world's reaction to somebody who lies to them? Anger. That's the only response. God is angry with the wicked every day. I think there ought to be an element of anger within us when somebody has lied to us. How do you feel when somebody, gets down in the garbage dump and picks out every word imaginable and uses that to describe who you are? Violence comes to those who are wicked. I've mentioned Brother Camp several times, but I remember Franklin Camp saying, evil has within it the seeds of its own destruction. You want to talk about Nixon's 18-minute tapes? That's all I'm talking about. Evil will destroy itself. And you've seen it, but the tragic is sometimes they really prevail. Verse 11, the mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. I just said, Brother Camp said, you have people in your life who said things to you that I hope has helped you. I don't even know that I'll have a tombstone one of these days, but it'd be all right to me to write across the bottom of my tombstone, it's always right to do right. That's a well of life. That's not profound. That's as obvious as, as anything. But is it helpful? Out of the mouth, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. As a man, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Well, I don't curse. I don't gossip much. I don't get angry. What do you talk about? The fact you do not talk about evil. Do not use evil speech. May indicate something more about you than you think. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. If a man's heart is filled with the love of Jesus and righteousness and godliness, what's his speech going to be like? But what if he's got an empty heart? If all you have of Christianity is just a bunch of negative rules that just keeps him doing all the bad stuff, and the rules that govern your life are rules that just keep you from doing wrong, you've misunderstood. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. It's not that I don't, and I look at my, well, I'm not too bad in my speech, but are you good in what you speak? You see, the natural response for a mature Christian when somebody curses you, he's trained himself. Bless them that curse you. Why? That's his heart. It's not that he just says, well, keep right on cursing. And sometimes we're in situations where that's the only response that we can have in relationship to that. But my, oh my. Look in verse 18 and 19. It's amazing in this one chapter how many verses there are. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. Isn't that amazing? What's slander? Somebody's name come up. How do you respond? What's your attitude toward them? You better be careful. God says that's a foolish way to live your life. And the first part of that verse, hiding hatred, has lying lips. Anybody ever tell you they loved you? And you knew they were lying? And they knew they were lying? And the worst part is, they knew that you knew they were lying. That's when it gets deep. But that's what it says. Lying lips. And then what's that? The next verse is verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. Sort of along this line. Young preacher many years ago, he must, by the time he was 22 years of age, have written 8 books. Brother Camp said, he's not smart enough to write 8 books at age 22. If you're talking all the time, there's got to be a lot of nonsense coming out of your mouth. Isn't that amazing? Now, I know our personalities. I know there are people who are extroverts and people who are introverts. That's not what this is talking about. But it says, in the multitude of words, you've increased the danger of sin. What does James say about the tongue? The tongue is a little fire that is set on fire, and this is the paraphrase because of what follows, set on fire by hell. How much fire a little spark kindles. Multitude of words. And there are times when the very best thing you can do is to say nothing. You can't have a fuss with a person unless you fuss back. Isn't that remarkable? I've mentioned my cousin Brenda several times. She was a soul winner supreme. She met some people on the internet way, way back yonder playing, you know, the game Rook. I may have told this story in here. Some of you have not heard this, so we'll have forgotten it. Playing Rook, you know, the card game Rook. And she played Rook. And between games, you could chat with people. She meets these people up in Ohio, and they become Christians. They got marriage problems, so they start writing Brenda about their marriage problems. And finally, one night about 11:30 or midnight, the husband called and said, Brenda, I'm leaving the house. What for? This crazy woman. She's standing right now. She got a skillet. She beat me over the head. And so she says, Brenda says, well, I'm sorry to hear that. She talks to him a little while longer. She said, now you'll be making a mistake if you leave the house. Be hard to come back in. Said, you said she's beating you with the skillet. How hard is she hitting? Well, pretty hard, she said. Brenda said to this husband, well, she'll get tired after a while. So let's talk tomorrow. I think that's wise. People get tired cursing you if you don't curse back. Isn't that amazing? You know, are you finished? Now, when you say that, you better brace yourself. They got, you know, that's just that's how great a fire a little spark covers. But honestly, a soft answer turns, you know that verse? Turns away wrath. Is that always true? No. The book of Proverbs, let me say this again. Proverbs is not a book of precepts. It's Proverbs. And they're rules that generally apply to life and life situation. And so he says, a soft answer turns away wrath, and we need to, I cannot believe that bell. Chapter 16, verse 27 and 28. Look at that. An ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lip like a burning fire. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisper separates the best of friends. Wow. Remember when you was in about the third or fourth grade? And women, this may apply to you more than to guys, but you had this best friend, maybe two or three best friends, and all of a sudden one of them turned on you, started whispering, telling things about you. That ever happened in your life? Or is that just, you know, I think it's rather common. Now, it happens in the adult world too. A whisperer separates friends. That's amazing. That is really, really amazing. An ungodly man digs up evil. There are people who delight in finding out the mistakes that others have made and digging it up and bringing it up. You let a young lady have a child out of wedlock. And 25 years later in the church, people still be talking about that very issue. Well, you know she got pregnant before she was married. Yeah, didn't she come forward and repent? Yes. But I just want to tell you about her because I think you need to know the mistakes that she's made. No. No need to go dig up evil. How would you like to be remembered by the worst thing you ever did in your life? I want you to think about all that you've done in your life. How would you like to be remembered for the worst things ever happened in your life? Folks, that is America to the core. I'm not talking Republican. I'm not talking Democrat. I'm talking America. But if a guy makes some mistakes when he's 15 years of age, never to be forgiven. Now, there's always the fruit of evil, and I'm not trying to minimize the fruit of evil, and it may need to be a part of something that needs to be discussed. But it's not just in Washington. It's in West Palm Beach. And if we're not careful, it'll be in the lives of every one of us. Agape love thinks zero evil. Well, Dan, I just can't remember. I just can't forget what he did and what he said. Then you need to remember not the day he did it, but the day he asked forgiveness. and then treat that mistake as though it never happened. I guess that's a stopping place. We've had that first bell. I guess it's almost time for the second bell. I don't know where to go next week. We've got one more week in here, and I'm just I've got all these verses. Go ahead and throw the next slide up and the next one and the next one. If you can do that, Buzz, if you're still over there, just show where we're headed. Just go ahead and keep going with that slide and that slide. Okay, the next one. That's where we're trying to go. We can't cover that, you know, but those are some verses. I just might make a copy of all this to give it to you. How would that be? All right, you are dismissed.